Morning, ladies and gentlemen. Our first case for argument is Echo versus Timberland. Mr. Trombetta.
Good morning, and may it please the court. I am Chris Trombetta, and I represent Timberland Machines and Irrigation, Inc. As I'm sure all three of you are aware, this case concerns a claim by Timberland that it acted as a franchisee of Echo while operating in the New England area, primarily out of its state of Connecticut. Under Connecticut law, there's the Connecticut Franchise Act, which indicates at least two primary elements which need to be satisfied for a company to be deemed a franchisee. The first is that the company must be engaged in the act of distributing or offering goods pursuant to a marketing plan substantially subscribed to by the franchisor. That is not the issue for today. The second issue is that the franchisee also must distribute the goods in connection or be substantially associated with the franchisor's trade name, trademark, logo, something to that effect. As part of that second element, one of the important points that the courts require is that there has to be some type of a financial nexus or connection between the franchisee and the franchisor. And I believe that's the issue which the district court addressed in its summary judgment opinion. The Connecticut Franchise Act was promulgated to protect individuals that would be deemed franchisees. And the reason for the act was that a franchisor could not go ahead and take away its business, which would cause a company to collapse and go out of business. And that is essentially what happened in this case. Timberland acted as the franchisee of Echo. Echo decides to pull the business, which it does. As a result, Timberland goes out of business. I think that's set forth in the affidavit.
Can you be a franchisee of more than one company at a time?
Well, I think I do
have
a hypothetical.
Can you have more than half of your sales from more than one company?
Well, Your Honor, I think there's, if you look at with respect to divisions, I think there could be a possibility that that could happen.
Let's talk about just a corporation. Can one corporation be a franchisee under this theory of more than one franchisor at a time?
If it's just one corporation and there are no divisions and there are no franchise agreements, I would say no. You could only be a franchisee of one particular.
Okay, why weren't you guys a franchisee of Exmark since you had more sales with them?
Because I don't think the financial nexus with Exmark rose to the same level as that to which it had arisen with respect
weren't
to Echo.
There more, your guys said they had more sales with Exmark, right?
Well, see, Your Honor, this is what I think is it sort of misses the point because I don't think that's what happened. I understand that there are two types of sales. There are dealer sales and there are Home Depot sales.
That's not my question. Forget about the Home Depot sales for right now. Didn't you have more sales with Exmark?
Are you asking what dealer sales, Your Honor?
Yes.
I don't have the pages in front of me, but I could say potentially perhaps we did have more dealer sales.
Now, let's look at what you told the bank, okay? I'm looking at the, this is from page 34 of the appellee's brief, and the submission that you all sent into to your bank showing that Exmark sales exceeded Echo and Bearcat sales in 2006, 2007, and were estimated to greatly exceed them in 2008.
With respect to dealer sales, that could be true, Your Honor. I'm not disputing that, if that's what it says.
So what do we have to talk about?
Well, Your Honor, I think what everybody's doing is looking at the dealer sales and is not paying any attention to the Home Depot sales.
Let me ask you about the Home Depot sales then for just a moment. How were those sales handled? Did your client take title to the goods and then deliver them to Home Depot?
Well, Your Honor, at one point they did deliver the goods to Home Depot.
Let's take it one step at a time. Did your client buy the goods from Echo? take title, take risk, and then resell those goods to Home Depot?
Well, there is a bailment addendum to the distributorship agreement.
Yes or no, and then explain your answer.
I don't believe we took title. I believe we took them pursuant to a bailment agreement.
Okay. How did the sales commissions that you all were paid on the Home Depot sales compare to the gross profit on your dealer sales?
When you say compared, do you mean in monetary amounts, Your Honor?
In terms of percentages. Usually, just so that I let me be transparent, usually salesman commissions are a lot lower than markups for somebody, for a dealer who's taking title, risk, delivery, and then resells.
Well, I understand what you're saying, Your Honor. And I guess, but there are two things with respect to this case that I don't really think make that point as compelling as you make.
Tell you what, I think it's compelling. Why don't you answer the question factually and then tell me why it's irrelevant?
Well, Your Honor, with respect to dealer sales, the goods are ordered essentially once the deal has been made to sell them. I don't think the goods are purchased with no idea as to what's going to happen with the goods in the future. I believe there was a 2 or 3 month.
Okay. How does the gross profit compare to sales commissions on the Home Depot sales in terms of percentage? And can I find that in the record?
Your Honor, I don't know if that is in the record. I didn't look at it as a percentage. I mean, in terms of doing the percentage, I know the amount is in the record. I know the sales amounts are in the record. So I know that data is there. The percentage was just a percentage based on the sales actually made by Home Depot as to Echo products. There was a percentage applied to that amount. So if I took whatever it was, $750,000, and divided into the sales, I assume that will come up with a percentage, which will show me what the sales percentage was with respect to selling Home Depot goods. I believe that's how it was done. Do I know the specifics right now? Unfortunately, Your Honor, I'm sorry, I do not.
Okay.
What exactly did Timberland do on the Home Depot sales?
Well, Your Honor, they had Home Depot representatives go to the Home Depot, deal with the Home Depot people, suggest to the Home Depot people how much product they could sell. They talked to them about putting advertisements, or not advertisements, positioning the product, what to tell people about the product. They talked to customers about the product. They did everything.
Sales agents for Echo, is that the idea?
Essentially, they would be sales agents for Echo. And also, Your Honor, when they...
But the goods were shipped by Echo?
I believe in the last year or so, the goods were shipped by Echo. And if you look at the commission schedule, it does go from, say, $1.25 million down to about $750,000. But the other thing that's important to recognize is at that same time, Timberland is not incurring the expense to transport the goods.
And different from any wholesaler, right? It buys goods, it resells them, buys from multiple sources. Seems pretty remote from what we think of as a franchise operation.
Well, Your Honor, but not in Connecticut, because this is exactly why the Franchise Act was promulgated, because if somebody gets into a relationship where they become dependent on a franchisor, and the franchisor can go ahead and take that business away and will cause that company, meaning Timberland, to go out of business.
No, it doesn't. Timberland will do wholesaling for anybody, right?
Well, it couldn't, Your Honor, because after it lost the Echo business, it went out of business. That's the whole point. It couldn't survive.
Wholesalers can go out of business. No question about it. Anyone can go out of business. The point is that if you're a wholesaler, you're not tied to a particular supplier. You can go and you can supply goods for anybody within a broad range. Right? So... Are you saying there's something special about Connecticut franchise law, different from other states?
Well, Your Honor, I'm not familiar with the statutes from each and every other state. I'm only familiar with the franchise statute of the Connecticut Franchising Act. And basically, that's what it says. You know, there has to be this substantial association, and I understand with respect to the use of the trade name and trademark, which we don't need to address, but the substantial association on a financial basis is what's being looked at. And the cases say, and I believe this is what the statute means, is there is this financial dependence.
Are there franchisees in Connecticut that are comparable to Timberland, wholesalers with not tied to a particular supplier?
Well, Your Honor, assuming we're not talking about a franchise agreement, I don't really know, because to be a franchisee, you would need to be connected to a supplier. And this, I believe it's the Hartford Electric Supply Company, where there was that relationship with the producer of the electrical equipment. And that's essentially, that case, I think, is extremely similar to this case.
Mr. Trombetta, the Second Circuit in interpreting the statute speaks of most or all of the business, does it not?
I think it does say, well, most or all. I've seen those words.
And the Echo, if we look at the commissions, Echo's products count for less than 50% of TMI's sales, right?
The commissions?
I mean, in the relevant years, it's roughly 30 to 35%, right?
I disagree with that, Your Honor.
You disagree?
And, Your Honor, if I could just speak to that just for 1 minute, please. Because what we're talking about here is a substantial association. Now, if you look at what the statute means, it says...
When is a wholesaler not a franchisee?
Why is a wholesaler...
When is a wholesaler not a franchisee of his suppliers?
Well, I think when his business is not dependent on the business of the franchisor, if Echo had...
Well, that's back to Judge Flom's question about... Don't you look at the percentage of the wholesaler's sales of a particular manufacturer?
Well, respectfully, Your Honor, I think everybody is sort of, or maybe it's just me, it's not everybody, I apologize, but I think everybody maybe is one step ahead of really looking at what substantial association means. Because the real word is, what is substantial?
All right, what does it mean?
Substantial means that when you have a dependence on a company such that when you lose that company's business, meaning the franchisor's business, and you go out of business, then
why
that is substantial.
Why did they go out of business just because they lost Echo?
Because they didn't have enough money to support their operations, Your Honor.
Well, I don't understand. I can understand how if the wholesaler is... identified by the public with Echo and all its, you know, like McDonald's or something like that. You look at their place of business and it says Echo and so on. I understand that, but what is there here that prevented Timberland from finding some other supplier replace Echo?
They did try to find a new supplier.
Why weren't they successful?
Because the supplier wasn't interested in hiring Timberland at that point.
Your Why?
It probably had another supplier. Your Honor, you have to understand this happened in October.
I don't understand you, because on your theory, if they had 10 suppliers, but they were, you know, financially shaky, and they lost one and went broke, you'd say they were a franchisee of that supplier.
No, I wouldn't, Your Honor.
Why wouldn't you?
Because I do think you need to look at the percentage dependency as well.
Back to the percentages.
Well,
which you've exaggerated by throwing in Home Depot and throwing out the sprinkler division.
Well, respectfully, Your Honor, if I could just...
Gerrymandering the percentages.
Well, Your Honor... All I can say is, if that's what I was doing, then the company never would have gone out of business.
Companies go out of business for a zillion reasons, like mismanagement. The fact that it goes out of business doesn't prove it was a franchisee.
Well, Your Honor, everybody keeps saying there are all these things wrong with the company, yet nobody has cited any one example of that.
Why didn't they find another supplier?
They did. Mark Zaytunjian says, I believe he went to the, is it the Husk? I can't remember the second name.
It's hard to pronounce.
It is hard to pronounce.
The chainsaw company?
Right. To try and replace Echo. He couldn't do it.
Why not?
Because, Your Honor, it's business. I mean, I just can't go out and get every manufacturer in the world to join my company because I happen to sell products.
Every manufacturer in the world needs one manufacturer.
He couldn't get it.
Well, why not?
Your Honor, he went to them. I guess they had another distributor, and there's nothing he could do.
Well, he offers a lower price, right? That's how you get business away from someone.
Well, Your Honor, I can't explain why, but he couldn't get it, and he tried. And
Mr. Trombetta, can I ask you a different question here about the money that the district court found that you all owed Echo?
Yes.
When was the merchandise in question ordered? Was it before or after the termination notice?
I don't know off the top of my head, Your Honor. I could look into that and get back to you. I'm sorry. I just don't know right now.
Okay. Well, thank you, Mr. Trombetta.
Thank you.
Mr. Katz?
Good morning, and may it please the Court. My name is Stephen Katz, and I represent the appellees, Echo Incorporated and Lawn Equipment Parts Company, or LEPCO. When I refer to the appellant, I will do so as Timberland, unless I specifically refer to a division of Timberland. In striking the affidavit portions of Mark Satoosian's affidavit, the district court was ruling in accordance with Rule 701 of the Federal Rules of Evidence, which precludes a lay witness from offering expert witness testimony, particularly testimony that requires specialized or technical knowledge. What has happened in this case is, since Timberland could not establish substantial association, including 50%, Timberland has offered a concocted affidavit where Mr. Satoosian tries to re-engineer the finances of the company to show 50% of sales and gross profits being attributable to Echo, when that was never the case, and when, in fact, the financials of the company that Mr. Satoosian relies on tell an opposite story. The district court held that Timberland failed to raise a material issue of fact, a genuine issue of material fact with regard to substantial association.
What's an example of testimony by Satoosian that is analytic in character rather than just reading numbers from the company's financial statements?
Well, for example, Judge Posner, he starts with a hypothetical with regard to the stricken portions. He starts with a hypothetical assumption that, let's assume the sprinkler house division of Timberland had been eliminated in 2005 instead of 2008. He then uses that to reallocate certain corporate overhead specifically to Timberland, to the sprinkler house division of Timberland, which he then eliminates from his analysis. And by so doing, he eliminates roughly $2 to $3 million a year in gross profits that Timberland, the corporation, received from the sprinkler house division, and somewhere in between $7 to $9 million in annual sales from the sprinkler house division that were actually booked in the financial statements of Timberland, the corporation. It's actually, he goes on beyond that. He then does a complete new gross profit analysis by trying to deduct additional expenses and additional items and reallocate additional items, which really appears to be more like a partial net profits analysis or an adjusted gross profit analysis. He does a couple other things that are very curious. In Timberland's actual financials, the commission paid by Echo to Timberland on Echo's direct sales to Home Depot are booked as a sales item. What Mr. Satoosian has done in his analysis is he removes it as a sales item and drops it all the way down to the bottom of the financials as if it's a gross profit, thereby assuming there's no cost associated with that commission. What he also does is he takes Echo's own sales to Home Depot, which were made pursuant to Section 1.3 of the party's distributor agreement, which allows for house accounts, and he calls Echo's own sales Timberland sales, thereby roughly doubling the actual sales of Timberland of Echo products, completely contrary to the financial statements of the company, of Timberland.
Why did Echo decide to terminate Timberland?
Well, there was a number of reasons. Probably the greatest reason was Echo was very concerned about the financial stability or instability of Timberland. There were also concerns with management, concerns with complaints from customers. The company, because of its capital structure and its failure to maintain adequate working capital, was having difficulty adequately investing in the business in order to grow the business. Bear in mind, historically, and Mr. Smaldone, the CFO of Timberland, has admitted this, there were a number of times where Timberland was late in paying Echo and had to pay Echo interest because of its untimeliness in making payments. Echo was very concerned that it could be left without a distributor in this territory. And to have to come up with a new distributor at the 11th hour could have been catastrophic to Echo's business. In that regard, the Petterit case, which I believe you cited earlier from the Second Circuit, has held that when the supplier has a good faith business reason to terminate, such as bad financial condition of the distributor, that it's incumbent upon the distributor, the purported franchisee, to show that those reasons were in bad faith. And in this case, there's been no issue, no genuine issue of material fact raised that Echo operated based on bad faith or that it did not believe that it was in jeopardy and needed to make a change.
Mr. Katz, let me ask you some of the questions I asked Mr. Trombetta. Could you explain to us how the, in essence, the commissions on the Home Depot house account were handled?
Sure. At the earlier part of the relationship, 04, 05, part of 06, there was a bailment agreement between the parties. That bailment agreement is actually attached to Mr. Zatoujian's affidavit. Pursuant to that bailment agreement, Echo sold the products to Home Depot.
Directly.
Directly. Title was always with Echo. The credit risk was always with Echo. Timberland never recognized those revenues, never reflected those revenues on its financial statements. In 2006, Echo started to ship directly. Timberland's role was being phased out, and as such, its commission was being reduced. And you had asked a question, Judge Hamilton, about the commission rate relative to gross profits. What I can tell you is that in 2008, for example, Echo had about $15 million of direct sales to Home Depot stores.
In New England.
In the New England area. Mm-hmm. And the commission paid to Timberland, as reflected on Timberland's financials, was roughly $750,000. So the commission rate must have been in the neighborhood of about 5%.
Okay.
I do not know the gross profit margin that Timberland accrued on its dealer sales, but based on my understanding, it was substantially higher than 5%. Bear in mind, that 5% is also without reducing it for any costs. So actually, the profit, if you will, on those dealer on those commission sales would be much less.
Why have this relationship with Timberland with regard to Home Depot? That is, in your other dealings with Timberland, it was the wholesaler and made the sales. Why was it different for Home Depot?
Oh, for Home Depot? Well, actually, at the beginning of the relationship, Echo wanted to involve the dealers or the distributors in the Home Depot relationship, but it became impractical, and in about 2006-2007, Echo started to phase out the distributors. That's why Timberland's commission was being reduced.
But why was that? That's the puzzle. Why? What's special about Home Depot compared to the other sellers of these products?
It's a large national chain, and the relationship was procured by Echo. The relationship and the sales were procured by Echo. Home Depot did not want to deal with Timberland. There's no evidence in the record that Timberland had any direct nexus or relationship with Home Depot stores whatsoever. It's also not plausible that a local distributor could maintain a relationship with a national chain like Home Depot. So it was incumbent upon Echo. It was Echo's relationship, and Echo managed the relationship. Only Echo made those sales.
Why did Echo want to have Timberland involved?
Well, again, I'm being candid.
Is there some advertising that is uniquely tied to Timberland that Echo couldn't provide? I mean, what is the benefit, first of all, to Echo, to keeping Timberland in the loop, so to speak?
Right. Actually, there was no benefit. The relationship was perceived as a threat by some of the distributors who sold to mom-and-pop hardware stores. So when Echo started to do business with Home Depot, they made sure to try to involve some of the distributors in that process, but it proved to be unworkable and unnecessary to have the distributors involved. This wasn't a sales commission in the sense that the distributors were procuring the sales and generating the business. This was almost almost a gratuitous payment that Echo was making to the distributors for very limited service.
We don't see a lot of truly gratuitous payments in business.
Well, Echo is trying to keep all of its distribution network happy and at the same time sell to a very large national chain that some of the distributors were threatened by.
Mr. Katz, can I ask you, again, another of these questions? When you all have sued for $1 million and some odd dollars of unpaid merchandise, when and the district court awarded you that, when was that merchandise ordered? Do you know?
That merchandise was ordered about the same time as the termination. I believe it was ordered. I know that most of it was ordered after the effective date of the termination notice, but before the termination was effective. So, for example, many of those purchase orders were issued in November of 2008.
Okay. Because you can't cut them off completely before the termination takes effect.
That was exactly Echo's rationale.
Yeah, okay.
Is Bearcat a subsidiary or a division of Echo?
It's a subsidiary. It's a separate company. It's actually a line of a company in Fargo, I apologize, I can't remember the name. Crary Industries is actually the company that sells Bearcat products. But, you know, as a matter of law, Judge Posner, even if you give Timberland credit for Echo and Bearcat sales lumped together, it doesn't change the analysis. The undisputed facts show that, again, starting with the gross profits, the Sprinkler House division was part of the same entity as Timberland Machines. Contrary to the arguments of Timberland, a division is not a separate entity. It's one and the same. All this court needs to do is go to the 2005-2008 gross profit margin analysis reports or even Exhibit 1A to Mr. Zitugian's own affidavit, and he lists $2 to $3 million of gross profits for the Sprinkler House in every given year. If one adds those gross profits to paragraph 67 and 68 of Mr. Zitugian's own affidavit, it's evident that gross profits earned by Timberland from its sales of Echo products were no more than 35 to 40% per year.
Well, there's something very odd about this case, Mr. Katz, that maybe you can help me with. But to me, the idea that a distributor can turn itself into a franchisee, for example, by spinning off a division into a separate corporation or by getting terminated by another distributor so that the last one standing then suddenly becomes a franchisor is a very odd way of looking at franchise relationships. Or the idea that we don't know there was a franchise until after the fact when the company fails. Then we know it was a franchise that could not be terminated at will. That's a very peculiar way of defining these relationships.
And I would note that that's why we believe it was perfectly valid for Echo to have a clause in the distributor agreement that required, actually it was a representation by Timberland that it wasn't dependent and would not be dependent on Echo. And your comment also harkens to the dissent in the Hartford case, which, by the way, is distinguishable from this case because in Hartford, the Connecticut Supreme Court found that the plaintiff and the defendant were viewed by the public to be one and the same, which is hardly the case here with Timberland that carried all these other lines.
You didn't move for summary judgment on that basis. So.
No, but the district court did make a number of factual findings that would support summary judgment on that basis.
Yeah, but if you don't move for it, you don't get it.
Okay. But we did move for it on that basis, too. But to what I was trying to point to, Judge Hamilton, is that the dissent in the Hartford case raised the very same concern that you're raising, which is it's not logical to allow a change in the business relationships of the franchisee to dictate whether or not there's a franchise relationship or not.
Where do we find the provision that says TMI says it would not be dependent on ECHO?
I can't remember the paragraph number. It's attached. The distributor agreement is attached to the pleadings. It's attached to the Zitujan declaration. It's attached to many of the depositions. I believe it's within Section 4.
So is there a 50% rule or presumption that the Connecticut courts apply?
Absolutely. The rule, as you've pointed out, is most, if not all. And it's interesting.
But that creates the problem that Judge Hamilton just asked you about, that you that the dealer can manipulate the percentages, right? It can just
but the courts
its other customers, and then it has more than 50% from the one supplier.
The courts do look at those percentages over the totality of the relationship, so that helps mitigate against a particular spike or a particular short period of time. But again, one thing that we would offer is that we're not aware of any published decisions where, in this case, gross profits and sales were not above 50% with regard to ECHO, period. But we're not aware of any published decisions where, let's say, gross profits was above and total sales was below, or vice versa, where a court has nonetheless held substantial association. Where that's been looked at, it's either above 50% for both, or there is no substantial association.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Mr. Katz. So, Mr. Trombetta, your time expired, but you can have another minute if you'd like. Do you have anything further?
The only thing I did want to address is I heard what Mr. Katz said and everything about the sales and the gross profit. But the one thing I would like to stress is the word substantial. I do think you need to look at the totality of the relationship between the parties, whether you want to count Home Depot sales or not count them. But if you look at the commissions, if you look at the dealer sales, if you look at Bearcat, you put it all together. Okay, even if you're looking for a 50% requirement, it exists. If you look at Sprinkler House, and respectfully, I think Sprinkler House can be used as a distraction here, even if you consider it, I don't think you should, you have to look at the net operating income of Sprinkler House because the expenses are directly attributable to the Sprinkler House operations. There is no overlap which would make gross profit even remotely relevant. It's only relevant if you're sharing the same expenses. That's why you look at gross profit. With respect to Sprinkler House, you just don't have that. If there's even going to be a comparison or an inclusion, you need to look at the operating income. Respectfully, I think that's form over substance even looking at the Sprinkler House. But if you do, I think you need to look there. And finally, I do think the dependence overall by the company is indicated by Timberland's failure because of the loss of the ECHO business. I think that is the compelling conclusion. And I don't think it happened because it was 10%. I think because it was more than 50%. Thank you very much.
Okay. Well, thank you very much to both counsel. Next case for